Please, speak as you might to a young child or a golden retriever.
It's an unfair game.
They're schemers. Schemers trying to control their little worlds.
Rich get richer, that's the law of the land.
It's just money.
Blasphemy! This is madness!
I drink your milkshake!
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Milkshakes Markets Madness. My name is John Kutzmita, and this is Brent Johnson, the man behind the dollar milkshake theory. If you are new to both of us and to the show, we encourage you to visit the Start Here playlist at the top of our YouTube channel. There's a couple videos there that will help you better understand many of the topics that we discuss here, at least specifically Brent's dollar milkshake theory and what that says about the global financial system. We do a number of different segments throughout the week, sometimes consistently, sometimes not so consistently. This is one we've been pretty good with. Every week we do a full-length episode, usually released on the weekends. Brent is traveling. He's a traveling man, a rambling man. He's in New Orleans for a conference, and we're still making the time to bring you an update, which makes sense because, Brent, it was quite a week, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, there was a lot went on. You know, on last week's episode, we talked about how there was a lot of data coming out this week. The Fed was data dependent. They had the Fed meeting. What was interesting for me is I didn't take the meeting as dovish as the market did and as everybody else did. I thought the meeting was extremely similar to the meeting in September. But the market did not think so. And I think to a certain extent, because he wasn't explicitly hawkish and because they had already taken the expected rate cuts off the table from the last meeting, you know, I think the market, in order to sell off, was looking for something explicitly hawkish from there. And there wasn't anything really explicitly hawkish from there. I thought it was basically the same. But when there wasn't anything new that was specifically hawkish, I think the market just kind of heard what it wanted to hear and it was off to the races. Now, maybe the market's interpreting it correctly. I can't say that that's not possible. But I think the market's getting a little bit ahead of itself. Just kind of like how we said all year, John, that the market, or especially, you know, Q3, how the market had kind of gotten ahead of its little self. And, you know, as the long end of the yield curve started to rise after the last Fed meeting, the market was kind of coming to terms with that. And so I think that was kind of thrown out the window the last 3 days too. We had a huge move in bonds. Bond yields came from, I think, like 5% down to 4.6% on the 10-year. The 2-year had a big move. And, you know, stocks just kind of went through the roof. And so stocks were up 6% this week, or the S&P was up 6% this week. That's a pretty big move for 1 week. I think at the end of last week, so 7 days ago, I think the S&P was like up 5 to 6, maybe 7% for the year. The average stock, I think, was actually flat down year. You know, the Magnificent Seven was the reason that the overall index was up kind of 6% range. But now we're kind of back to low double digits again. And so it's always amazing to me how quickly sentiment can change and how, you know, 1 hour you're feeling a certain way and an hour later you're feeling completely different. I personally think the market, again, has gotten a little bit ahead of itself. We also talked last week, though, that we said that, you know, if the data came in kind of dovish and if Powell wasn't specifically hawkish, maybe we would get a couple week bounce out of it. And we've already gotten a really, I would have expected, you know, the like kind of 5 to 6% over a couple weeks. We got it over a couple days. So now I'm really interested to see whether we get any follow through over the next couple weeks or whether it was all kind of front loaded to these first 2 or 3 days and where we go from here. I am of the belief that, you know, we're still going to have more volatility between now and the end of the year. So I don't think we're necessarily out of the woods, but man, it made a lot of progress really quickly this week.
Like I said, man, you're traveling at the moment. You're in a conference. Normally, we also do a Monday peak of the week where we look at different economic data that's coming up and how that might play out. This upcoming week is a little quieter considering what we just experienced. It's also a shorter week with Veterans Day at the end of the week. The only real thing happening throughout next week is just a bunch of Fed speakers. We've highlighted many times in various episodes, we're not a fan of the fact that markets have become obsessed with jawboning and forward guidance and everything else. But we've also highlighted very, very recently that, you know, the enthusiasm, which we see clear on display this week, from investors, from animal spirits, whenever there's like a slight hint that, you know, the tightening cycle is over, various forms that the Fed can use to create a tighter economy, not just the overnight lending rate, the Fed funds rate. There's other things they can do, but generally the indication from the Fed that they're potentially, you know, chilling out a little bit leads to these big, like you said, sentiment shifts, market rallies, which ultimately just kind of is the market putting their foot in their mouth, so to speak, because it's just going to push the Fed now back deeper into a corner where they need to get more hawkish in tone or eventually do another rate hike, when perhaps they wouldn't have if investors just took the messaging slightly differently. So do you feel like going into a quiet data week after a big data week we just had that they're going to try to whip the markets into shape again?
Well, I think that's very possible. And what this kind of reminds me of a little bit is last year's Jackson Hole meeting. If you remember last year's Jackson Hole meeting, or no, it was last July. So like 15 months ago, July meeting, the market took the comment as extremely dovish. And the market rallied like crazy in August of 2022. And then at the end of August, Powell, it was the Jackson Hole conference and Powell's speech, and he came out and he explicitly at the beginning of his speech, like the first two or three sentences, was like, hey, I think all of you guys are crazy. I didn't say what you thought I said. You better be careful because more pain is going to be needed. Now I'm making this up, but he explicitly like kind of went after the market's reaction to the Fed meeting. Now I don't necessarily expect that we're going to get that same thing this week, but it would not surprise me at all to see some of the market reaction walked back. You know, we've talked several times that we thought that the Fed was doing what they're doing because they were trying to slow the market. They're trying to slow the economy. That is their way of getting inflation down. And we also talked several times that, you know, as you just mentioned, as the market runs higher, that's not exactly what they want. And so I think what happens here is, you know, as they get closer to the end, they start thinking, maybe we don't have to cause a recession. Maybe we can get this much elusive soft landing. So I understand that they might not want to be as hawkish, or they might not want to push back as hard as Powell did after the, you know, July of 2022. But I also don't think they want the market just going gangbusters from here either, because that's not a slowing economy, right? They still want to get inflation down. And so I think they kind of have to walk a tightrope a little bit, but I would expect that they will lean hawkish in their comments as opposed to lean dovish. I don't think they could have gotten a much more dovish reaction, even if they had explicitly said rate hikes are off the table and we're done hiking. Or if they said we're done hiking and we're probably going to have a cut sometime next year, I don't think the market would have reacted a whole lot differently than it did. I mean, this has been an extremely positive reaction economically from the Fed meeting. And again, barring an actual, you know, explicit statement that they're not cutting or hiking anymore, I don't know how they could have expected. I don't know what you could do to expect a more positive market reaction to what they said. So I would expect them to walk it back. Now, whether they do it explicitly or just kind of softly, I don't know, but that's kind of my expectation.
I'm really surprised at the move in the bond market, because I don't think a Fed pause, whether the tone's hawkish or dovish, suggests a 30 to 40 basis point move in a couple days. I mean, it's the biggest move, and it's to the downside in yields, but it's regardless of what direction, one of the biggest moves we've seen in bonds over a 3-day period, if you exclude all the craziness during 2020, going back more than a dozen years. So it was a significant move. I think many would say it caught a lot of people off sides. One would say, okay, well, the selling just kind of got out of control at 5%. We talked about this in a recent episode, where when you start comparing dirty laundry, you know, in the US is paying 5%, and you look at, you know, somewhere else around the world that's only paying 5%, the US bond market starts to become attractive at that point. But what's also kind of interesting when you're considering just the move in the, let's say, long duration bonds, is we are getting to the point where, you know, and this is another thing that we've talked about recently, that the market was to some extent starting to agree with the Fed. And an inverted yield curve says a lot of things. Some people interpret it to mean that the market is disagreeing with monetary policy, saying rates should be different than what the Fed is targeting. And it seemed like the higher for longer hawkish tone of the Fed was bringing the curve up to meet their expectations of where the Fed thought rates should be priced. So now you've kind of have this, maybe it's some form of economic loosening, or, you know, conditions not being as tight because the market itself has pulled the long duration bonds now. But how do you think this, you have now an inverted relationship between Fed funds and the bond market. Do you think this is again kind of creating a gravitational pull on what the Fed does next? Or are they just going to stick to their guns and say higher for longer and actually do it, which oftentimes they usually don't, you know, stick behind their words?
Yeah, so I'm going to keep saying the same thing that I basically said all year, is that, listen, the Fed, I don't think the Fed has a problem if equities are 10% lower. Now, think about it. Equities are up 6% this week. So if they fell 10% from here, that's only 4% below where they were last week. So now the Fed has, you can almost say they've got 10 or 15% cushion before I think they would even start thinking about worrying about equities. And again, I think that they have been open to the idea that we're going to have to cause a recession to get this down. And so I think that the long end, I think after the last Fed meeting, the market was trying to come to terms with the long end being higher than longer. And I stand by that. I do not think that they are going to cut until they have to cut. You know, and I think they may even cut too late when they have to cut. Right? They always overdo it. The pendulum swings too far in each direction. And so, and that's part of the reason why I kind of feel like I listened to a different Fed meeting than everybody else. And I kind of feel like the market kind of heard what they wanted to hear, because I didn't hear anything about cuts. He even explicitly said, we're not even, remember a couple of years ago, he said, we're not even thinking about raising rates. This time he said, we're not even thinking about cutting rates. Right. So, and that one, that's kind of a hawkish comment, but then when he didn't explicitly say we're going to hike, you know, everything just kind of took off. And so again, I think the market is kind of getting ahead of itself, especially the long end. You know, I've been pretty vocal that I don't think that the U.S. is in trouble of going bankrupt before any other country, or is not going to be able to sell its treasuries. But that doesn't mean that yields can't go higher. You know, and I've said part of the milkshake is that the high yields in the U.S. pull capital into the dollar, into the U.S. markets, and deprive the rest of the world. So I think the government is going to continue to spend a lot of money next year. I think the budget will deficit will probably be bigger than expected. So they've got a lot of bonds to place. And I don't think anything has really changed in the last 4 days that all of a sudden Janet's got to start selling fewer bonds. So, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out. Barring a crisis, I don't think the Fed cuts, and I think the long end probably goes higher.
I saw an analog chart today that was comparing Black Wednesday in 1987. And if you're just going off of that, which the analogs are silly, they've never come true. And it's just, it's depending on who you are, it's either FUD or it's, you know, some sort of reinforcement to a narrative that never really tends to play out. But in this particular case, if you look at where the 10-year is now, if we had a similar drawdown in both equities and then therefore what it would ultimately do to bond yields, it would really only bring the 10-year down to 4%. And we think about all the things that, you know, higher rates, I mean, thousands or hundreds of percent higher than they were in 2020, what that does to businesses and other types of asset markets like commercial real estate that need to refinance. You know, a move from 5% to 4%, 100 basis points, is significant in terms of, you know, certainly over a small period of time. But it's not going to help entities who have to finance themselves to be doing that, you know, where currently maybe they're at 50 bips or 100 bips, to have to suddenly, you know, go to 400 basis points. You say oftentimes you give us that reminder that markets trade on expectations. Where do you think, you know, have expectations gone out the door? Are they, you know, what are they trading on if they're not looking at some of these factors that were probably driving yields higher just a couple of days ago?
Well, again, this is where I think, and listen, I may change my mind tomorrow morning when I wake up. So, you know, don't make a huge bet on this, but I think the market kind of misinterpreted Fed or the Fed, and I think it's kind of Powell's fault. I think he said the right things, but again, he came across as dovish, even though he didn't say anything explicitly dovish. And he had many, many chances to be hawkish, and he wasn't explicitly hawkish. So I think it's kind of his own fault. But I just feel like the market does trade on expectations, and I feel like the market heard that there's no more cuts. I'm sorry, that there's no more hikes. And the next move is probably a cut. That's what the market heard. Now, whether he meant that or not, that's what the market heard. And the market trades on expectations. So the dollar fell, bond prices rose, equity prices took off. It's actually not dissimilar to what happened at last year's November meeting. If you remember last year's November meeting, he was pretty hawkish, but he said we're data dependent. And he said most of our work is done. We are still going to hike, but we've made a lot of ground. We don't need to hike as fast anymore. That was a meeting on a Wednesday. And then on Friday, there was a decent jobs number, but then like the ISM came in really dovish and markets just took off. And there was a huge rally in November. You remember November of last year. And I think just the same way the markets kind of, and the dollar had the dollar peaked and then the dollar pulled back, you know, subsequent to that Friday data release. We kind of had a repeat of that today. You know, the Fed kind of said the same thing they said a year ago. And then we had some dovish data come out subsequent to it. The market took it as super bullish. Equities took off. The dollar pulled back. And I think that's because markets trade on expectations. And the expectations that the market heard was that the Fed is done. Now, again, I think that they're misinterpreting that, but that's what happened. And I think we've talked about this several times this year, John. And you just mentioned it a minute ago. As the market tries to front run what the Fed's going to do, it actually encourages the Fed not to do what the market thinks it's going to do, right? And so, you know, I would expect next week some of the Fed comments to be not necessarily uber hawkish, but err on the hawkish side.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you're referencing the November 2022 timeframe, because there's a lot when you're looking at technicals. There's a lot that's, you know, in the recent moves that's tracing back to that. I mean, in terms of stock bond portfolio performance, TLT, which was just crushing people all year, had the biggest 3-day climb since around this time last year. You're seeing a lot of little indicators like that. That, you know, man, not to beat it to death, but is it just more violently sideways? Is this a support resistance type of thing where we're just going to bounce off of this and just get dragged along until people just can't take it anymore? Now, you did mention the dollar, and, you know, you have said in the past that, you know, oftentimes the move in the dollar comes down to yields. You know, you're going to see a strengthening dollar when yields go up because it's more attractive to, for particularly capital outside the United States, to flow into the U.S. To take advantage of those higher yields. Do you think this move, which is the biggest 3-day decline so far this year, do you think this is very reflective, a shadow of how everything had more or less some of the biggest 3-day moves this past week? You think this is, you know, primarily yield correlated?
Yeah, I do. I think it's yield correlated and expectations for yields to come down even more. And, you know, I've said this several times, and it's just so funny, John. I think it's kind of funny that the dollar just had its biggest 2-to-3-day move down all year, and it's still at 105. I mean, I remember a couple years ago, people were telling me it was never going to get to 105 again, and it's on its way to 75 and 70 and 80, and, you know, and so here's the thing is, and even today, like I got some, you know, DMs and, you know, Twitter messages and stuff. And I just find it funny that every time the dollar pulls back, that's the beginning of the end. But regardless of how much proof that it isn't, right? This is the time that it really is going to die. And the point that I'm going to make again here, I've made this several times, and I'm probably going to say it till the day I die, is that the dollar falling is actually that perpetuates the system. That allows things to keep functioning as they always have. And sure, can the dollar fall for 6 months or 9 months, just like it did last year after the November meeting? Of course it can. And what happened over the last year? Markets were fine. Markets rallied. Everybody was, happy. So there wasn't a crisis. What would potentially concern, potentially, because I would have to see why it was happening, was if we get into a huge crisis and the dollar is falling, that could potentially be indicative that the dollar's days as the global reserve currency are starting to come into question. But when the dollar falls and markets rally, that perpetuates the system. And, the reason I think the dollar is going to go higher in the years ahead is because I think we're going to have trouble. And that's what always happens. When we have trouble, the dollar goes higher. So again, if the dollar falling and markets rallying, that just kicks the can down the road for a while. And it puts off the crisis that I think many people foresee.
We spent a lot of time so far in this episode kind of reflecting on this past week's move. What put an exclamation on it today was non-farm payroll. I think it's the first time, I don't have the data, but it's the first time in a long time, I can't remember when the last time a non-farm payroll report missed expectations. We've kind of all just been waiting for that moment, especially as expectations are getting softer and softer. One of the things we've seen consistently all year is revisions lower too. So the likelihood that, today we had 150,000 print versus 180 expectations, most likely that gets revised lower. Pretty much everything so far this year consistently has been revised lower. One of the things that we saw in this report that we haven't seen much of so far is a sizable uptick in unemployment. That, really put an exclamation on the week, because everything just rallied and ripped that much further. Are we back into this bad news is good news, which we've kind of been belaboring that point so far in this conversation, but we haven't talked about the non-farm payroll at all.
Yeah.
What was your take on that report and how the market reacted to it?
Well, I mean, it was a pretty bad report. And the reaction today, I thought, was appropriate. The reaction Wednesday post-Fed and yesterday, I thought that was a little much. But today, when actually the dovish data came out and the market was up 1% or a little over 1%, a little less, that kind of makes sense to me, right? Because they said we're data dependent. The data came in, the data was pretty bad. That would indicate that maybe there are no more hikes and maybe the next move, a year from now or something, is a cut. And so markets trade up on that expectation. That kind of made sense to me. But again, I think it's kind of funny that by the market rallying on that, it kind of takes away, again, like what we said, it takes away the likelihood that the Fed would stop being hawkish. Again, the Fed, until they get inflation down, here's the thing, by the Fed's own calculations, inflation is not low enough yet. And I think most people believe that inflation is actually higher than CPI says it is, or the government statistics say it is. And so if inflation is actually higher than what the government says it is, and the government is saying it's not low enough, then why do you think all of a sudden they're going to stop doing what they're doing, right? And so I'm so curious how next week plays out. We always joke it, that I always say it, next week's going to be really interesting, right? Or next week. And it's because it is. It's just, I'm actually now so curious how next week trades, because I feel like this week was a little, not confusing to me, because I understand why it did it, but I'm not quite sure why people interpreted it the way they did. And so it'll be really interesting to see whether or not the Fed confirms the messaging that the market heard, or whether they walk it back.
Well, we're also discussing this week as a whole, and the data that we received as if it's existing in a vacuum. We still have escalations going on in the Middle East. So it's not like, war isn't a factor here and everything's just going to hum along. So it's funny how quickly the markets pretended like that's just another, day in the life, of macro. And within that, we rolled out this week, or at least trying trying out this flash market update. We did a couple of things on both post the FOMC. We just released a video where you shared your thoughts on Bitcoin. Teaser for everybody, we have one coming up before we release this. So by the time you watch this, it'll already be live that talks about gold. If anything, gold's probably the one that's not buying the narrative. It's pulled back a bit. You know, that was kind of your concern, that a lot of the price peak recently was a war premium and a reaction to that, and that usually doesn't stick. It's fallen back below 2000, but it's holding steady. So what are your thoughts on what gold potentially is telling us? And, you know, you're now in New Orleans for a conference. Have you had any conversations with friends there yet that you want to share here in correlation to some of those views?
Yeah, so again, this is so interesting to me. So here's another reason why I kind of feel like the equity markets, at least, and the bond markets maybe have misinterpreted the Fed speak. Because if the message was what people think the Fed message was, I would have expected gold to go much higher than it did. And I would have expected Bitcoin to go much higher than it did. So over the last 3 days, gold and Bitcoin are basically flat, right? I mean, I think they're maybe up slightly, but for the most part, Bitcoin's right where it was Wednesday morning, and gold is right where it was Wednesday morning. Now, during the Fed meeting, gold sold down to like 1970. Post-Fed meeting, it rolled up to like 1985. Overnight, I think it jumped up to 2002, and then it pulled back. And then on the non-farm payrolls today, gold immediately jumped from like 1987 to 2000. But then I think by the end of the day, it was back down to 1990. If we were really at a place where, you know, real yields were going to be coming down because the Fed was going to be cutting, I would have kind of expected to see gold above 2000 and hold above 2000. I would have expected Bitcoin to be rallying. What's interesting is that GDXJ and GDX, the miners, had a very good day. The miners were up between 3% and 6% today. And so it is kind of interesting to see the miners kind of start to outperform gold a little bit. Because, you know, I've actually been saying that gold's going to pull back because of the war premium. And I think the miners would pull back even more. And they did. You know, the miners pulled back pretty low earlier this week. But they had a very good day today. So again, it's going to be interesting to see how gold, Bitcoin, and the miners play out over the next couple of weeks.
Well, like I mentioned, we introduced this flash market update. I think that's something when you have an event like the FOMC and we want to jump on, share thoughts immediately because it's timely, we'll use that type of segment. We haven't done a midweek update in a while, and I think that's more appropriate when there isn't a specific topic, but things have kind of accumulated or a conversation like this needs a bit of a freshening up. And so with given your travels, I don't see us doing a Monday peak of the week. There's really not much to say there other than there's a bunch of Fed meetings. So I think the next time everyone will get to see us, hopefully will be some type of midweek update. You'll be home from the conference. You'll probably have plenty of new ideas or at least fun experiences to share. And maybe you'll get a chance to reflect on whatever the market response is to start the week.
Yeah, I'll give you one little anecdote from the conference so far. I did a panel with Peter Schiff, and of course we were kind of going back and forth at each other as we usually do, but we had a good laugh about it afterwards as well. And so that's one anecdote I would say. You know, just because you don't agree with somebody doesn't mean you can't get along with them. The other thing I would say is I was at a dinner last night, and it was a lot of interesting people at this dinner. And I got sat next to somebody who I don't always see eye to eye with either. And it wasn't Peter, but it was somebody else who I think is extremely smart, but I have a difference of opinion on some things. And I kind of was like, you know, are we going to, then, you know what? I was like, you know what? Let's just talk and let's not have an agenda. And I got to say, we sat there and we talked for an hour, and it's one of the most fun dinners, one of the most interesting conversations I've had in a long time. I mean, we talked about politics. We talked about religion. We talked about the markets. We talked about travel. We talked about family, and we would debate stuff back and forth, but it was awesome. It was so much fun. And I think that's even a lesson for me a little bit. You know, I can tend to be a little antagonistic and like to debate, but you can have fun doing it too, and you can be nice about it. And if you keep an open mind, you learn something. And actually, I got a few little pointers that I didn't know about that I thought was kind of interesting. So anyway, that's my soapbox rant for the day.
Well, maybe we'll get some more color on that. We'll see if you're still friends with this mystery person at the end of the weekend. But we appreciate everyone joining us. Like I said, we did post three back-to-back videos. One was recapping the FOMC. The other was highlighting your thoughts on a recent Bitcoin short trade that you did. And the other one posted on Saturday was your updated thoughts more or less on gold and the gold price pullback. So we hope everyone enjoyed that. We hope you enjoyed this video. And until Brent is settled back in his island home and we've had some action in the markets, you'll have to wait to hear from us potentially with a midweek update. Brent, any last words? And you can't say no and then say something.
No.
All right. No final words from Brent. We'll see you guys all real soon. If you want to follow Brent on Twitter, please do so at Santiago AU Fund. You can follow me at John Kutzmita. You can follow this show on both Twitter and YouTube using the handle Milkshakes Pod. We look forward to your comments, your follows, your likes, your shares, all that comes with that, good and bad. We'll talk to you guys real soon. This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.